Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 69. I'm recording it on Friday, January 2nd, 2009. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Beyond Valuations. There's all sorts of things going on in investo world here at the start of the new year. There was a thread at the Income and Dividend Investing Board at Morningstar.com. It was put forward by a friend of mine who did the kickoff post, Russ Sershnitz. Russ, I'm sorry, I have a hard time with that name. Russ is a fantastic poster. I think I would rate him second only to John Walter Russell in all of the posters, and I've seen many, thousands of them, at investing discussion boards. I would rank Russ second. And I don't say that because Russ is a big believer in my investing ideas. I don't really think he is. You could read this thread. The thread title is, it went up, yesterday, January 1st, 2009, and it's at the Income and Dividend Investing Board at Morningstar.com, and the title is Rob, a.k.a. Hocus, Vindicated. Reading this thread starter, you would think Russ was a believer in my investing ideas. I've posted with Russ for a long time, and John Walter Russell still posts with Russ over at the Income and Dividend Investing Board, and I think Russ supports some of these ideas, but by no means all of them. And of course, that's a sign of intelligence. You know, that's a good thing. If he supported them all, you'd sort of have to wonder, you know, is he just buying into a different guru? You know, is Rob Bennett his John Bogle? You know, something, or is John Walter Russell his John Bogle? Russ thinks for himself. And that's, you know, that to me is intelligence. That's intelligence. It's not just IQ power. Independent thought is, in my estimation, a big part of intelligence. Russ is one of the greatest independent thinkers I've come across in the investing area. As I say, we don't agree on everything, but every time I read a post by Russ Sershnitz, I learn something. I don't think there's ever been an exception. Not always agree, but there's always a point being made. There's always some intelligence behind it. Anyway, Russ did this very kind thread saying that, you know, my ideas have been vindicated after they were attacked at the Vanguard Diehards board back when I was posting there from July 2005 through February 2007. I'm going to be discussing this thread, I think, in a future podcast on a different topic, but there's one post that came up on this thread that was important for a different reason, not really the focus of the thread, but sort of a side issue, which is the question of, are the investing ideas that I put forward, do they relate only to valuations? Because you always hear me talk about valuations. You know, everything I say has a valuation theme or valuation line of thought to it. Valuations are always there. That's all that I talk about. That's all that I write about. That's all that I post about. So is that all there is to valuation-informed indexing and rational investing? So I wanted to, when I saw this comment, I thought there's a possibility for confusion there and I had better address this question. So first, the post that got me thinking about this is a post put up by a guy, Peter71, and Peter71 is also an outstanding poster. He's put up some great stuff at bogleheads.org, and I think Peter71, I think he may have posted at passionsaving.com one time. I believe that that's the case. I believe I recall him posting it at passionsaving.com at the blog. It might have been when it was Financial Freedom Blog instead of a Rich Life Blog, which is the current name. But I believe that I recall seeing that name. Anyway, let me see. I'm going to quote from what Pete said. He says, finally, note that while valuations may help explain long-term stock returns, that doesn't mean that still other things don't factor in as well. As much as I love the Bogleheads forum, I may be even less of a diehard than you and Rob. He's addressing John Walter Russell here. In that I personally think investor demand for equities, as potentially measured by stock market participation rates, factors in as well. To use Rob's lingo, I suspect that the fact that the Japanese public isn't, quote, stock drunk, helps to explain why, at least in the medium term, no one has yet snapped up the valuation bargains in the Japanese market and made a killing. Great point. Great point. And, you know, one that I feel I need to address because, what is this, podcast 69 and the first 68 all deal with some aspect of the valuation question. And what Pete is saying here is maybe you're missing a big part of the picture, Rob. And, excuse me, and I was just taking a sip there from my drink just to keep my mouth moist while I speak. Yeah, I think he's right. That's my short answer. I'm going to give a longer one, but that's my short answer. I first think, in order to address this, I should start by setting the stage by giving a little background on the so-called investing quote-unquote advice that I offer at my website and in these podcasts. There's a sense in which I offer advice, and there's a sense in which I don't. So I want to give a little background so that otherwise you won't be able to understand, I don't think, what follows fully. On the question of just let me hit this right off the head. Do I offer investing advice? Am I an investing expert? Well, if you read the stuff at the site, you know, whenever I use the phrase investing expert, I always put the word expert in quotes. I don't believe there's such a thing as an investing expert in the year 2009. So John Bogle's not an investing expert in my mind. You know, Warren Buffett is, well, maybe Warren Buffett is, I don't know. Warren Buffett comes awfully close. Warren Buffett knows his stuff. The only trouble with Warren Buffett is Warren Buffett offers sophisticated investing advice that the average person, 80% of middle-class investors, can't take advantage of because they just don't have the time necessary to study stocks to the extent they would need to take advantage of Warren Buffett's advice. So I would be fairly comfortable in calling Warren Buffett an investing expert, but I think John Bogle is more important because the people I care about most are that 80%. Those are the people I write about, I write for, let's say. And Bogle, I think, started a revolution in investing by giving the 80% a practical, realistic way to invest, simple way to invest. And Buffett, so Bogle comes really close to being an expert as well, possibly, I would tend to say more important than Buffett, really, because Buffett, for the sophisticated people, Buffett's better, but for the average person, 80% of us, Bogle is more important. The trouble is, Bogle advocates passive investing, which is a mistake. So, and that poisons everything. That's why there's so much talk about valuations in all of my podcasts and all my writings, because I want us to take advantage of the Bogle revolution. I see that what Bogle did in creating the Vanguard family of funds and in creating the indexing concept back in the late 70s is a revolution in investing. It changed the history of investing forever in a wonderful, positive way. Bogle opened up the rewards of stock investing to the 80% of the population to which they were not available before. Just because these people don't have enough time, they have jobs, you know? They raise families. They like to take in a movie every now and again. So they can't spend every weekend studying stocks, yet they want to participate in the wonderful gains that come from investing in the U.S. stock market, Bogle made that possible for average people. And so if there's anyone out there who has done more for the middle-class investor, I don't know who it would be. So Bogle revolutionized investing. The trouble is he messed up. He dropped the ball. He got a lot right, but he got one very important thing wrong, and that's he bought into the passive investing concept, which means he doesn't consider valuations. When telling people where to set their stock allocations, he just ignores valuations. And that's the worst mistake you could possibly make. And as a result, Bogle's influence has been, to this day, I think largely negative. I hate to say it. There's a big, big, big thread going on today at the Bogleheads.org board, and I can't give you the title of it. I'll be doing another podcast on it, and maybe more than one. But it's a thread in which Taylor Larimore, the co-author of the Bogleheads Guide to Investing, basically acknowledges that he's abandoned the passive investing concept. He's given up. He says that if stocks continue downward, he's going to sell all his stocks, which is in complete conflict with everything he's taught since the first post he's ever put up. And Taylor denies that he's abandoning passive investing, but that the reality of it is that he is. And so there's a huge thread discussing this. But one guy in that thread made a comment. I think everybody else missed it. But he said, oh, it just hit me like a locomotive. There were so many long posts. This guy just had a one-line post, and it said, I'm beginning to wonder if Bogleheads.org is even a good thing. Wow. Bogleheads.org, in theory, in potential, is a wonderful thing. It changes the history of investing, because something we've learned during the great safe withdrawal rate debate of the last 7 years is that investors don't learn really by reading books or by listening to speeches or by reading magazine articles. Obviously, all those things are part of the process. They all help. But we learn by talking to other investors. That's what really clicks. That's what really influences us. And so I think going forward, every investing strategy should every group of investors that has a strategy should set up a discussion board to allow ongoing discussion of how to handle different situations that come up, because that's how people learn. So you've got to have it. Bogleheads.org, they already have it. It's in place. So they should be miles ahead of every other strategy at this point. The problem, once again, is they follow Bogle's recommendation of following passive investing, not changing your allocation at times of insanely high prices. And as a result, none of their ideas work. It's just a complete unmitigated disaster. They've done a great job of selling these ideas. These ideas have spread all over the United States and really all over the planet, but they're doomed. If you don't count valuations, you can't get it right. All the numbers are wrong. All the advice is wrong. It's not a little bit wrong. It's exactly wrong. When investors were engaging in suicidal behavior from 1995 through the first part of 2008, sticking with their high stock allocations at times of insanely high prices, Bogle and the Bogleheads were urging them to stay at those insane allocation levels. Instead of telling them to lower them, they were telling them to stay. Precisely the opposite. Anyway, that's where all the valuation stuff comes in. That's why the first 68 podcasts are about some aspect of the valuations question. My goal in all the work I do is to get enough people to understand that valuations affect long-term returns so that we can open up the Bogleheads board to honest posting on valuations, on safe withdrawal rates, and also on the emotional side of investing, all these things. And to open up not just the Bogleheads, but, Motley Fool, Morningstar, Early Retirement Forum, IndexUniverse.com, Financial Webring Forum, all these places, RadDoctorPages.com, .org, I'm not sure which it is, You know, all these places. Money Magazine. I'd like to have them all talking about investing in rational ways, not in the passive investing influenced ways that are common today. So in order to make that happen, people need to come to understand that valuations affect long-term returns, and that's not just words. A lot of them will say, oh yeah, valuations affect long-term returns, I agree, you know. But then you say, okay, you agree, that's good. How much did you change your stock allocation when prices went to insane levels? Oh, I didn't change my stock allocation. That would be timing the market. Oh no, I never would do that. I never would do such a thing. Well, actions speak louder than words. If you stay with the same stock allocation when prices go to insane levels as you followed when prices were at reasonable levels, you, in practical terms, you don't believe valuations affect long-term returns. So the first 68 podcasts are aimed at persuading people that valuations do affect long-term returns, that we must change our stock allocations when prices go to insane levels, and that we should open up all our boards to honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and all other valuation-related topics. And then we're off to the races. Then Bogle's ideas become, once again, not the worst investing ideas we've ever seen in history, but the best investing ideas we've ever seen in history for most middle-class investors. Buffett's, I think, may be better for the sophisticated few. But the Bogleheads then rise to the top of the class. They become, you know, the best advice for the most investors. Okay. So, but what I wanted to say is that, am I an expert? Well, as I say, I don't really believe anyone is an expert until we get to that point. And you could say that Buffett is. You can't say that Bogle is, because Bogle's putting forward some wonderful, wonderful stuff, pure gold. But he also urges passive investing, and that pretty much ruins it, makes it actually a negative force. And as this fellow said on the thread, Bogleheads.org is today a negative force. It's helping people in an incredibly powerful way. It's using this internet discussion board technology to help thousands upon thousands of people, but it's helping them destroy themselves. What it's doing is it's putting ideas in their head that things that can never happen in the real world might actually happen, you know, that they might stick with the same stock allocation and not pay a huge financial price for doing so. And then it's reinforcing that message. Instead of reinforcing buy and hold, which is what the board should be doing, what the board should be doing is what people need in order to... Buy and hold is what works, I believe. But in order for buy and hold to work, you've got to stick with it. So what that board should be doing is, on a daily basis, people would go to the board and they'd be reaffirmed in their strategy so that their confidence would remain high. And instead of giving up on buy and hold, like Taylor is, they'd be sticking with it through the long term, which is what you have to do to get good results, which is what Bogle used to advocate. Taylor says that Bogle now agrees with him, that Bogle is abandoning buy and hold. I haven't really checked that out thoroughly, but what I think is probably the case is that Bogle is on both sides of the issue. That's what I found. Every time I've checked out Bogle's record on any question that comes up where people have different viewpoints, it always turns out that there are statements on both sides of the issue put forward by Bogle, and no one can say, does he favor buy and hold? Does he oppose buy and hold? Who the heck knows? There'll be 50 statements where he says one and 50 where he says the other. Bogle is an unusual animal. I mean, he's the biggest advocate of rational investing I know of, outside maybe of John Walter Russell and Robert Shiller and Warren Buffett. But let's say he's fourth. And he's the biggest advocate of passive investing I know. He's probably number one on passive. So he's the biggest advocate of the two competing strategies. And the two competing strategies are exact opposites of each other. Exact opposites. And he's a big, big advocate of both. Anyway. So I don't really think of Bogle as an expert. I'm happy to call him an expert as long as I put it in quotes. That tells people that I think he knows his stuff, but that there's some doubts as to whether his advice is good advice. And Shiller's an expert. He's obviously extremely knowledgeable. But the problem I have with somebody like Shiller is that there are many people in the Shiller camp. You know, Rob Arnott, John Walter Russell, Cliff Asness, Ed Easterling, Andrew Smithers, all the people that say valuations affect long-term returns. Bernstein for the, you know, for the length of chapter two of his book. Lots of people. Scott Burns at times has said that valuations affect long-term returns. Obviously, Michael Kitsis says that. Lots of people. Are these people experts? Well, yes and no. They're experts. They understand that valuations affect long-term returns, which puts them ahead of the people who say that passive investing is the way to go. So they're experts in that sense. They're a step ahead. But they don't have the benefit of all the input of all the people advocating passive investing, which is probably 90% of the quote-unquote experts out there today. So I believe that we learn about how to invest effectively as a community. So when we lose all of the input of 90% of the population of experts, none of us are really experts, in my view. So I put the word experts around everybody. I just say nobody's an expert. We're at a primitive level of understanding. And until it becomes consensus viewpoint that valuations affect long-term returns, and that that means something in the real world, it's not just words, it has practical effect. You must change your stock allocation when there are dramatic changes in stock prices. Until that becomes common knowledge, I question whether any of us are to become experts. But I am expert least of all. I am not even, it's not right to call me an investing advisor. I give investing advice. So I guess if you want to put it that way. But I am a reporter. I'm a journalist. That's my background. And I get into this solely as from a journalist perspective. I started my website. I started posting on discussion boards because I wanted to share with people what I had learned about how to save for an early retirement. That's where I came into the onto the scene. I received, you know, tremendously gratifying responses at Motley Fool. I think it could fairly be said I was the most popular poster at that site during the year or two when I was posting there on saving. And, then we had a problem of abusive posters came into our community and began trying to destroy it. And I felt that in order to protect the community, I had to tell people what I knew about safe withdrawal rates, because the leader of this abusive group was using his safe withdrawal rate study to drive people out of the community, the best posters. And I had known all along that the study was analytically invalid, but had been afraid to say anything about it because he had this sort of abusive side to him, and he had supporters. So anyway, you know, I started posting honestly, accurately on safe withdrawal rates in May of 2002, and that led to this huge, great safe withdrawal rate debate that has been the biggest, most controversial series of investing discussions in the history of the internet. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of posts at probably a dozen different discussion boards now, blogs, and the debate rages on today, almost 7 years later. So, and I think, you know, it's clearly a big factor in that thread with Taylor. You know, it's a big, the whole Bogleheads community was formed because of the great safe withdrawal rate debate. It was an effort to escape. It was the passive investing dogmatists were seeking to escape Morningstar.com because Morningstar.com was permitting honest posting on valuations, and they wanted to escape that, and they set that up. And today, Bogleheads is beginning to open up to honest posting. That thread by Taylor is a very, very, very positive sign. There are many posters on that thread posting honest viewpoints, both in support of passive investing and against it. So as of today, I'm not sure that it's even accurate to say that there's a ban on honest posting at bogleheads.org. They're obviously not going to allow, I don't think they would allow a discussion of the stock return predictor there today, or valuation-informed indexing, or the retirement risk evaluator, or the scenario surfer, or the buy-and-hold reality checker, or rational investing. I don't think they're totally open to honest posting, but they are allowing different viewpoints on valuations to be expressed, which is something totally new. It's never been done before at the bogleheads.org or the earlier board, the Vanguard Diehards board at Morningstar. And now they are permitting that, so that's huge. But we'll get to that in later podcasts. But anyway, I'm sort of doing a twisting around preface here, as is my wont. I am a reporter. I report what I see. I go to discussion boards because I want to learn not how investing works in the classroom. I'm not too interested in the ivory tower egghead stuff. I want to see how it works out in the real world when you get down to real people. And discussion boards show you that. How, you know, people take the theories and then on discussion boards they try to apply it in the real world. And that's what Taylor's doing. Taylor was citing a theory. You know, he's saying, oh, buy and hold, you know, timing doesn't work, stay the course, all that stuff. And now the real world is hitting Taylor, you know, right between the eyes. And he's saying, wait a minute, this passive investing stuff is for the birds. You know, I'm going to bail out. He hasn't bailed out today. He said if it drops a little more, he's going to bail out. 100% zero stock allocation. That's what he's talking about. Complete, total violation of all passive investing principles. To go from a high stock allocation to a zero stock allocation solely because, you know, of panic. You know, he never said he was going to do this at earlier times. He now says that he did. He says, oh, I always was thinking of doing this, but he never said any such thing. He didn't mention it in his book. He was asked point blank on Threads, you know, would you ever do that? He said, oh, no, absolutely not. It's the worst thing one could do. It's a violation of everything I believe in. But now that reality has reared its ugly head and he's seen how passive investing works in the real world, now that's a change. Now, I don't mean to mock Taylor, please understand. I'm mocking the idea. I'm mocking his support for passive investing. And I'm sort of mocking the fact that he's pretending that he hasn't abandoned passive investing. But I think Taylor may be the smart one here. There are a lot of people in that thread saying, oh, I'll never abandon passive investing. I'm sticking until the end. Well, you know, if things get bad enough, and they just might, I think they may be looking to Taylor and saying, Taylor, you were right. You know, you bailed out when the bailing out was good in relative terms. Would have been better to have bailed out, obviously, you know, before the price crash, but better to bail out after the first price crash than after the second price crash. So I'm not saying Taylor is wrong in what he's doing. I think that it's a totally illogical strategy. Be far better. I obviously recommend rational investing, in which case he never would have been at that highest stock allocation in the first place when prices were at the levels they were at. So he wouldn't have the problem. There would be no panic. But if you're going to panic, it's better to panic soon. I do think that's fair to say. So I'm not an expert. I question if any of these people are true experts. Just briefly, before I get to the meat of the podcast, I just want to give a little bit of the history of how we got to where we are today. And it goes through three stages. First is the safe withdrawal rate question. That's the beginning of everything. And I won't spend any time on it. You'll have to listen to earlier podcasts on the great safe withdrawal rate debate. But that debate was about whether we should consider valuations when constructing our retirement plans. And the old school studies say absolutely not. It is forbidden to consider valuations. And I say, everyone knows, there's no disagreement anywhere that I know of in the investing community. I've never run into anyone who says valuations don't affect the result. So to me, just, you know, dum-de-dum-dum, you know, Rob Bennett reporter walking along, I said, well, given that there's universal agreement valuations affect what, you know, whether our retirements are safe or not, the valuation level that applies on the date the retirement begins has a huge effect on whether the retirement is safe or not. Why don't we consider that when calculating the safe withdrawal rate? And I asked that question at a Motley Fool board. And the consensus of the community is that that was the most exciting idea we had ever considered. We had huge response. Check out some of the comments if you look at the Band at Motley Fool's section of the site. I have an article there from the early days of the Motley Fool discussions. I think it's called Community Comments on the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. So, not everyone agreed that we should look at valuations by any stretch of the imagination. The majority, I would say the majority, said we should not. But it was clear that the majority wanted to discuss it. The majority, say 80% wanted to discuss it. 20% said no. We have to shut down the discussion no matter what, even to the point of making death threats. We have to destroy the whole board. You know, the logic there was, if we have to burn this city to the ground to stop discussions of the realities of safe withdrawal rates, then that's what we do. And they did that. That board doesn't exist today. But I think they changed it. They talk about some other subject, but it's not a retire early board today. But, you know, there was great support for learning, for a learning process. But there was not majority support for the idea of the new school studies. That, you know, I want to be clear. I'm not saying that there was majority support for that. There was not. Quite the contrary. If 80% supported allowing honest posting, I would say probably 80% also supported the old school studies. So there was a big majority for the old school studies, not counting valuations. And there was also a big majority for allowing discussion of the question so that we could learn. But the evidence was overwhelming that we should consider valuations. The evidence was overwhelming that we did not have a majority, but we did have all the evidence. No one ever made an argument that made any sense that valuation should not be considered. The quote-unquote argument why valuation should not be considered was strictly emotional. There was a feeling that if we reported the safe withdrawal rate accurately, it would make people who had high stock investments, high stock allocations feel very nervous. They would be afraid that they were going to suffer huge losses, which of course they were and they have. So all we were doing was reporting the numbers accurately, but that was a problem for many, many, many people. Not just one, not just the leaders. It was a problem for many, many, many community members, the majority. All right. That was the great safe withdrawal rate stage of our discussions. I mean, that's where it got the name, great safe withdrawal rate debate. But it really moved on beyond that, because then we got to a point where, you know, John and I, that we met at the Motley Fool Board, and we were exploring, you know, John was doing the research, and I was asking lots of annoying questions. That's sort of my role. And, you know, we were doing all this work, and I guess what happened is there was another board where I started a new board called the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group. And the idea there was just to do research in real time and have lots of people comment on it and develop, you know, greater insights all the time, better and better insights. And so John was kind enough, you know, he was devoting full time, he's retired. He was devoting all his time to this. So I said, we've got this great resource, let's make use of it. So we did that. And at some point, we had proven the safe withdrawal question beyond any doubt whatsoever. You know, if you want to see the results of our work, look at the Retirement Risk Evaluator at the website. And that's a calculator. It's the only calculator I know of on the internet that gives accurate safe withdrawal rate information. But we had learned this wonderful thing about retirement planning, that you have to take valuations into account, and that if you don't take valuations into account, the numbers you get are wildly wrong. And if you do take them into account, obviously, if they're not perfectly accurate, they're as accurate as we're able to get them with today's, you know, the state of knowledge of investing today. So we were very happy with that. But an obvious question came to us is, in order to calculate the safe withdrawal rate accurately, we had to see how great is the effect of valuations on long-term returns. And we found that it's very great. And so we said, well, shouldn't we be helping not only retirees, shouldn't we also extend this to the non-retirees, the investors in the accumulation stage that are building up to retirement? Wouldn't they like to know, you know, what their stock allocation should be? They're being told it's okay to stay at the same stock allocation. That's obviously wrong. If valuations affect long-term returns, how much should they be lowering? Don't they need some tools to know how big a risk are they taking? You know, what sort of stock crash are we likely going to see if stocks perform in the future as they always have in the past? So that's where we started developing the stock return predictor. And the stock return predictor is not really aimed at retirees. It's aimed at index investors. And so as we developed that research, we started looking more at the accumulation stage. And then, of course, that led to me in 2005, I started posting at the Vanguard Diehards Board, which is, you know, Bogle influenced. And I'd always been a big Bogle fan. Bogle is the one who taught me that valuations affect long-term returns in his book, Common Sense on Mutual Funds. So that was a natural fit. And we had lots of people there, hundreds of people at the Boglehead, at the Diehard Sport, Vanguard Diehards, who were very, very excited and very smart, you know, offered lots of helpful comments. And so that's the stage, the second stage of the discussions where we were developing the strategy called valuation-informed indexing. And valuation-informed indexing is really just Bogle's ideas without the passive investing part. We took all of Bogle's ideas and said, the one flaw, the thing that's causing all the human misery is the idea that you can stick with the same stock allocation even when prices change dramatically. What if we just X that out? You know, we use all Bogle's ideas, but we X out the passive part and replace it with what the historical data says. We replace it with how stocks have always performed in the past. That's valuation-informed indexing. That's phase two. Then we got into, you know, the people who had led the smear campaigns at Motley Fool and destroyed that board, and then they destroyed other boards. They destroyed the nofeeboards.com site. They burned that to the ground. They did damage at the early retirement forum. They moved over to Bogleheads and said, well, you know, not Bogleheads, Vanguard Diehards. They said, well, these ideas are catching on like wildfire. We've got to destroy this board. And this was a big board. Vanguard Diehards board was huge. And they said, how are we going to destroy this board? So that became a big focus. And, you know, at some point during those discussions, I said, this is crazy. You know, we've got thousands of people who have expressed a desire to learn the realities of stock investing. We've got this small group of goon posters, these viciously abusive savages. You know, they're threatening to kill people. They're setting up porn sites and linking to people. All kinds of smear campaigns. And I'm thinking, what is this all about? And it wasn't so much even that you had these goon posters, because that just happens. You know, that's sort of a bad side of life on the internet. But why were the leaders of the board encouraging them? Mel Lindauer was encouraging them. He was putting up links to John Graney's site. He was saying, John's great. He's my good friend. You know, I've recommended him in my book. You know, I hope John's posters will come over here and post. And so they were. They were all signing up. And people were saying, why are all these abusive posters signing up? This used to be a reasonable civil board. And now all these abusive people, where did they come from? Well, they came from Mel inviting them over. But Mel did nothing about it. Taylor did nothing about it. Morningstar did nothing about it. I talked to the site administrator at Morningstar. He wasn't willing to do anything. Bill Bernstein posts there. Bernstein wouldn't do anything about it. Larry Swedro wouldn't do anything about it. Rick Ferry wouldn't do anything about it. John Bogle wouldn't do anything about it. Why? I struggled with that one a long time. And the answer that I've come to is that it all has to do with valuations in a different way. Our failure to consider valuations caused us to calculate the safe withdrawal rate wrong, which will likely lead to millions of busted retirements. Our failure to consider valuations caused the whole passive investing movement, where people were told not to change their stock allocations, which is what led to the huge bull market and which led to the huge stock crash that inevitably followed it. So that's phase one and phase two. Phase three is the failure to consider valuations actually made us irrational. It makes it impossible for anyone to have a rational discussion of how investing works. Now, that's as bold a statement as I've ever made in my life. But I take it for what you think it's worth. I am here to say I've worked this daily basis, 10 hours a day, 6-7 days a week for 7 years. I say it's so, you know. Who am I? I ain't nobody. I'm a guy who posts on the internet. But believe it or don't believe it, it's all documented. It's all documented. I can give you links, and there are links at my site if you want to look at them. But that's the story. When you adopt, you see, passive investing is rooted in irrationality. The whole idea that you wouldn't need to change your stock allocation is frankly, it's insane. Of course you need to adjust your stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. What else would you think to do? But the passive investing school says no, don't do that. What happens, I believe, is that passive investing school, passive slash emotional. It goes by different names at different times. Let's call it passive slash emotional. It's always out there. It's like a virus, and it's always out there. But it goes into remission during times when rational investing prevails. And then something happens, and, you know, you can look, you know, look at Shiller's book if you want to find out some of the things that cause emotional investing to rise to the forefront. Something happens to make it popular. I think it might be that the middle class is worried about its retirement. And that's what's made that's what made investing so emotional in the 90s. The middle class started to get worried about its place, whether it can hold on to its middle class status. And there becomes a great desire for investing strategies that make no rational sense, but that make great emotional sense, that give great emotional comfort. And that's where passive investing enters the scene. Passive investing, you know, as bad as it is from a logic standpoint, as lacking as it is in logic, it makes up for that in emotional pull, you know, 100 times over. It's an extremely emotionally satisfying strategy because it's almost believable. It allows people to give in to the get-rich-quick impulse in a way that almost sounds responsible. Many of the people who post at Bogleheads, at Vanguard Diehards, are responsible people in other areas of their life. They're highly responsible people, people that have saved a lot of money, that work hard, you know. But when it comes to investing, they invest passively. They do not change their stock allocations when prices go to insane levels. So, you know, all of this is sort of the history. Now, the common theme, as I say, is valuations, valuations, valuations. But this guy, Peter, is saying, you know, maybe valuations isn't everything. And I think he's absolutely right. And that's what I wanted to clarify in the podcast. Now, I don't know. He makes a point here where he says, I want to bring out one point. He says, I may be even less of a diehard than you and Rob. I think that's true. I'm an extreme diehard. I'm a big believer in Bogle's ideas. I'm a Boglehead. I don't think there are too many people that post at those boards that are more of a Boglehead than I am. Possibly no one. I think I'm much more of a Boglehead than Taylor Larimore or Mel Lindauer. They are considered probably the two leading Bogleheads. And I think I'm much more of a Bogle supporter than either one. I don't mean that as a rip at them. I just, you know, that's my take. They think that they're more Boglehead than I am. They don't think I'm a Boglehead at all. Mel's told me so. But, you know, I think I am really more of a Bogle supporter. But, so I think this guy's probably right. Pete is probably right. And if you don't really get into Bogle's ideas, you're never going to quite get as excited about Rob Bennett's ideas because all of my ideas are rooted in Boglehead thinking. I just cut out the passive part. That's the difference. But that has implications that reach in 100 different directions. So there's all kinds of differences. That's why there are 69 podcasts. But that's really the thing that separates. You know, you're walking down a path and you love these ideas, buy and hold, keep costs low, you know, stick with your strategy. Ignore the noise, you know, the day-to-day noise. All of this, you're walking side by side, and then you get to this fork in the road, and it says, am I going to go off into fantasy land and believe that valuations don't affect long-term returns, or am I going to go the rational route and say, yes, valuations affect long-term returns. I need to change my stock allocation in response to big changes in valuations. That's where certainly Mel Lindauer and Rob Bennett split. Anyway. That's so he's right about that comment, but then he says, I may be even less of a diehard than you and Rob, and that I personally think investor demand for equities, as potentially measured by stock market participation rates, factors in as well. So what Pete is saying is there are factors other than valuations that you need to look at. Well, that particular factor he mentions there, I think that may be a valuation question. He's saying if it's in part a valuation question, perhaps not totally so. I don't think totally so. Stock market participation rates definitely affects valuations. So there are many more people there were many more people participating in the stock market in the 90s than usually do. And that's one of the reasons valuations went to such insane levels. So as stock market participation rates return to more normal levels, you know, valuations will come down. But it works both ways. When valuations come down, it causes people to leave the market. So you can't quite say, as he's saying, that stock market participation affects valuations, or affects, he's saying it affects returns. He's putting it as an alternate theory of how returns would change. Instead of valuations affecting returns, stock market participation rates affect returns. Well, they do, but that in some cases, that's just another way of saying the same thing, because stock market participation rates correspond with valuation changes. But I, to some extent, that's not always so. And then he mentions the Japanese situation, and he says, you know, Japan, of course, he's saying that there are valuation bargains in the Japan market, and people should be trying to make a killing. I don't know the Japanese market well enough to say. That I cannot comment on. I just don't know. There are certainly people who think that the Japanese market is valued well. I think there are others who don't necessarily think that, or at least not as strongly, but I cannot comment. I'd have to study it to comment, and I haven't done so. I usually stick with the U.S. market, which frankly is a Bogle idea. And this is really, really the meat of this podcast, what I wanted to get to, is I stick with the U.S. market. And I do that, as I say, largely in deference to John Bogle. John Bogle has always argued, or at least I've heard him argue many times, he may argue the other way in other comments, but he has often argued that if an investor invests in the S&P, he's covered. It's a broad U.S. stock index. I think he may or may not, I don't know, he may favor the total stock market index, which is just a little, it's broader than the S&P. And that's, of course, fine, too. I have no problem with that either. But Bogle has argued you don't need to invest internationally. It's not necessary if you invest in the U.S. market. And he's always taken some criticism for that. People have always questioned that. And Bogle's argument has been, well, a lot of U.S. companies, large U.S. companies, they have investments overseas. So you're sort of getting an international mix, even if you're only in the U.S. index. And that is, I think that's true to a point, but I don't think it's entirely true. There certainly are strong signs that we are entering into a global economy. And if that's the case, the U.S. S&P is no longer going to be the benchmark, the primary benchmark. There's going to be a world stock index that's going to be the primary benchmark. And the U.S. S&P will essentially be a segment of the world stock index. So if that comes to be the case, does a valuation-informed indexer stick with the S&P? Or does a valuation-informed indexer go to the world stock index? Well, the answer to that question is I don't give an answer to it. I don't own valuation-informed indexing to begin with. You know, it's not like I don't have a copyright on the term. You know, anybody can study valuation-informed indexing who chooses to. Anyone can offer opinions on it, just as anyone can offer opinions on passive indexing. You know, Bogle's idea. So, do what you think is right. I don't have an opinion. Now, I think that Pete makes a good point when he says, you might want to look at Japan. I think that makes all the sense in the world. By all means, look at Japan. I am not going to look at Japan, not because I think it's a dumb idea, but I only have so many hours in the day, and I'll tell you, my time is all taken up studying valuation-informed indexing and studying rational investing and studying the New School Safe Withdrawal Rate research. You know, my plate is full. So I'm not going to study Japan. I don't have any free moments. I'd love to see other community members do it. You know, I'd love it if they did it in a constructive, positive, you know, way. But that would be great. And then also study the question of, you know, should investors be shifting from a focus on the S&P to, you know, a global index? Or, you know, some say, well, you should be, you know, shifting to REITs or shifting to, you know, small cap or whatever. Well, if you think that's the way to go, first of all, please do it. Secondly, I'd be grateful if you would write up your thoughts and submit them as posts at the A Rich Life blog. I'd like to share it with my fellow community members. And if you are so inclined, if you are so ambitious that you want to write a full article on it, please do that. and submit it for possible inclusion at the website. You know, if you do a good piece, I think that would be valuable. The ideas that I put forward have never been intended to be Rob Bennett copyrighted ideas. I started out, I built the Motley Fool Retire Early Board because I wanted to have a community of people who were pursuing the same goal, early financial freedom, retiring early, acquiring financial freedom early in life. That's what I'm all about. And I believe that we could learn more by having a community of people doing it instead of me going to the library and reading 100 books. I did go to the library and read 100 books. I did that. And I learned things. Certainly was a good experience. But I think I learned more through interaction with my fellow community members than I ever did reading books in the library. You know, if you look at what were the influences on the Passion Saving book, the biggest influence was what I learned from fellow aspiring early retirees. And the same thing's true in the investing field. So when I start, there's a reason why, you know, some people say to me, oh, you know, this is at the Goon Central Board. They say, Rob, why don't you start a mutual fund, you know, valuation informed indexing mutual fund? Or Rob, you know, why don't you try to get a peer reviewed paper? It's like, let somebody else get a peer review. I have nothing against peer review papers. Get a peer review paper yourself if you want. Form a fund if you want. But I'm a discussion board guy, you know? That's me. I tested out the discussion board as a way to learn about saving, new saving strategies, and I got paid back 100 times over for the time I spent doing that. I think we came up with some amazing ideas, and you can explore those ideas by looking at, you know, the sections of the site that deal with saving, the upsizing section of the board, the turned on budget section of the board, the retired different section of the board. You'll get lots of savings articles there, not investing stuff. And that was wonderful. That was a wonderful experience. Well, I just took that same philosophy to investing from May 2002 forward. That's when the switch came, when I stopped writing about saving and began writing about investing. And the concept is just to do the same thing, the same process of using what the smartest investors in the world are doing. And some of the people at the Vanguard Diehards Board, the Early Retirement Forum, the Financial Web Ring Forum, the Bogleheads.org site, the old Safe with Grow Rate Research Group. These are some of the smartest investors in the world. Okay? That's the story. And I like the idea obviously I want to share what I can. I want to, you know, earn my keep, so to speak. So I certainly try to share what I can. But when they have questions about how does it work, how does valuation-informed indexing work, I take the time out of my day to try to respond to the best of my ability. And that's what I do. Nothing more, nothing less. But that's what it's about. So I don't want to give, you know, I don't want to give people the impression that, you know, we've done something huge. We've done something absurdly ambitious. Correcting the old school safe withdrawal rate studies in itself was ambitious. You know, we've corrected retirement planning for the entire United States. All these big name experts got it wrong. Our little community, the retire early / indexing community, got it right. I think we should all pat ourselves on the back for a job well done. But as big as that was small potatoes compared to what came next. Then we totally rewrote Bogle's approach to investing. He advocates passive indexing. You know, we advocate, those of us who are, you know, convinced of the merits, advocate valuation-informed indexing. Totally new strategy based on Bogle, to be sure. But, you know, goes in a very, very different direction. Gives, you know, much, much better results. Far higher returns at far less risk. So, you know, that's even bigger than rewriting the retirement studies. Then we went bigger yet. We blew it up to the biggest thing it could be. Rational investing totally replaces, or is intended to totally replace, passive investing. Passive investing is what 90% of the experts advise today. We are saying that's all wrong. We are saying it should be rational investing. So You know, it's absurdly, and it's an absurdly ambitious agenda. I can't help that. There are some people get mad at me for that. They're like, I remember there was a guy, you can read some of these comments. I have another article at the Bandit Motley Fool section called Investing Discussion Boards Ban Honest Posting on Valuations. And there was a guy, I don't remember his name, I think it was Jim something, I think, I'm not sure. And he said, oh, I like a lot of what Rob's saying. A lot of it makes sense, but he's basically saying all the other experts got it wrong and he got it right. I can't believe that. Well, I like the comment because it's a common sense take. But yet, that is to a large, that's, you know, he stated it a little bit off of how I would say it, but the general point there is correct. I am more or less saying that. I'm saying that most of the big name experts, not all, 10% are rational, you know, advocates, 10% argue that you have to take valuations into account. So there are big name people that argue what I say, that you have to take valuations into account. But 90% argue for passive investing. That is a stone cold fact. I mean, I don't know if it's exactly 90%, but the vast majority advocate that it's okay not to change your stock allocation. And I say that the opposite. You know, every single bit of evidence I have seen for 7 years says you not only can you change your allocation, you must, that you're doomed if you don't change your allocation. And I think what we're seeing with Taylor, you know, just proves it highlights the point, underlines the point. So an absurdly ambitious agenda. Well, do I now want to go beyond that and study what's going to happen in Japan? No, I'm tired, you know, I need a rest. I've got a book to write and I've got a website to build up. So I'm going to keep knocking myself out for the community. I've got podcasts to record. I'm going to keep knocking myself out for the community, but I don't intend to go into new areas. And if other community members want to do it, I think that's wonderful. But I don't want anyone thinking that I'm saying, you know, come to PassionSaving.com and learn everything there is to know about investing. No. I think if you come to PassionSaving.com, you will learn the most important thing there is to know about investing today. The most important thing is to know that passive investing does not work, that you must take valuations into account, that if you fail to do so, your odds of success are not good, not at all good. And that if you take valuations into account, your odds of success go up astronomically. Stock investing is not nearly as risky as most people think it is. You are likely to get higher returns at far less risk. So it's a win-win-win-win-win, but that's as far as it goes. So, you know, a lot of people will say another angle that people come at. I did want to read a comment by Russ that came immediately after that, because this highlights what I'm trying to say. Russ Serchnitz, and he says, this is the post that came after Pete's post, and he says, furthermore, if diehard investors, retired or accumulators, limit equities to very low percentages because of fear of 50% market declines, which, by the way, is likely during a lifetime of investing, how can they hope to achieve their financial goals? After all, it is the long-term potential return of equities that portends the returns that investors seek and need. See, I think that's the point. We need a boglehead approach to investing. We need an approach to investing that works for the average person, not the sophisticated Buffett types. We've got to have that. The middle class today is investing in stocks to finance their retirements. So we've got to have a simple approach to investing. And now, I do not think that people looking for a simple approach should be investing in Japan. Okay? It may or may not be a great investment opportunity. I don't know the answer. I just would not feel confident stating an opinion unless I studied it, and I don't have time. If others study it, I'm grateful for them doing so. I'm not going to believe everything they say, but I'll read it. I'm open to hearing it. But I don't have time to study it in enough depth that I'm going to move my money into Japan today. You know, I'd have to know a lot more. John Russell is a big believer in dividend investing, and of course Russ is. Russ Serchnitz is. Well, these are two of the smartest guys I know. If they think dividend investing is great, I think it's probably great. You know, I haven't studied it in enough depth to say with certainty, but I've read enough of John's stuff and some of Russ's stuff too, that I am persuaded that there's something there. I'm absolutely persuaded there's something there. I can't state things as strongly as John does because I haven't studied it in enough depth. But I'm confident that it would be wise for all, you know, investors who have the time to look into dividend investing. I absolutely agree. You know, I do, and I think we're moving to a global economy, so I think that makes sense to think of investing globally. But I think we need an approach for the average person. We need an approach that doesn't require, you know, some people say, should you invest in gold? I have a tiny bit in gold, but, you know, never a big amount. Fine. You know, gold could be a good investment. Silver can be a good investment. But again, you've got to study it. If you don't study it, I think I wouldn't put my retirement money into something I hadn't studied enough to feel confident about it. If you don't study it, you're always going to have doubts. And it, you know, if gold goes down, you're going to panic, just like Taylor's panicking today. You've got to study something enough to feel confident about it, or you shouldn't invest in it at all. My theory is, if you don't know it well enough to be confident about what you're doing, don't put $1 into it. And that's why I'm against passive investing. If you believe in passive investing, this is Rob Bennett's opinion. Please understand, I know this is a bold, controversial statement I'm going to make, but this is what I believe. If you don't understand investing well enough to understand why passive investing cannot work, you should not have $1 in the stock market. That there, you know, take it or leave it. That's an incredibly bold statement, but it's what I believe. I don't think it can work because the trouble is, if you don't understand it, sooner or later, there's going to come something that's going to cause you to panic. And you're going to panic because you don't have reserves of confidence to fall back on. If you study it enough to understand that valuations affect long-term returns, which is the ABCs of stock investing, if you get that, then I think you'll be able to stick with your strategy through the hard times. At least you'll have a reasonable chance. So there's all kinds of questions that come up. You know, you could say, you know, some people will say that, they say these things to me all the time. They say, well, the kind of thing that comes up in this thread with Taylor, people are saying, buy and hold can't work because if prices go down, you're going to panic. Well, that's true if you don't count valuations. You know, what they've been doing on that board is they've been telling people for years now, they have this rule of thumb. They say, be prepared for a 50% price drop. Okay? That's their test, whether you should be in stocks. Be prepared for a 50% price drop. Where the heck did they get 50% from? When we were at a PE10 level of 33, we had a 90% price drop, not 50. And in January 2000, we went to 44, not 33. So you need to be prepared for at least a 90% price drop, or you're not even in the game. You're not even serious. Do you see? What I'm trying to do is change that bit of insanity. I am saying passive investing is insane. It's not just wrong. It's insane. And that's, of course, why I'm not saying the people who advocate it are insane. In areas other than passive investing, I'm sure that they're perfectly reasonable, nice, smart people. I have no doubt whatsoever. All of them. All the ones I know. But investing is an emotional endeavor, and we all have a get-rich-quick impulse, and we all want to believe these things, these fantasies. And when everybody around you is saying they believe it, you're going to fall for it, unless you look at the historical data and understand that it doesn't work. So that's all I'm trying to do, but that's a very, very, very big thing. If we achieve that, if we get to a point where passive investing has been buried 10 feet in the ground, all of the advocates of passive investing come out and say, you know, never, ever, ever, ever again should you consider sticking with the same stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. That's out. That's one thing we've learned. Doesn't work. Please invest rationally. Say we get to that stage. Have we answered the question about Japan or about gold or, you know, about things like that? No. But at least we'll be talking rationally. It would seem to me our odds of coming up with good answers to those questions will be a whole heck of a lot better than they are today. I don't feel I could trust anything any of these so-called experts came up with today on investing in Japan. How do I know that the same emotional issues that are causing them to give this bad advice on setting your stock allocation, how do I know that's not influencing their advice on Japan? I don't. I know no way of distinguishing. You can read what they say. You can try to sort through it. And if the guy's smart, maybe you can say, you know, like I feel this way with John Walter Russell and with Russ Cercinets. They're both smart. They're both straight shooters. If they say dividend investing is great, I'm inclined to think they're right. But I'm not willing, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I might put a small amount of my money on that. I have some confidence that they're right. But I would limit it until I studied it myself in greater depth. So what I'm saying is don't invest unless you have personal confidence. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying don't listen to any guru. Don't listen to John Bogle. Don't listen to Rob Bennett. Don't listen to Robert Shiller. Don't listen to gurus. Learn from gurus. Please don't say that I'm saying not to read these people. I am very much saying to read them. But I'm saying don't take them on faith. Think through. Is what they're saying, does what they're saying make sense? And I say passive investing doesn't make sense, so I cut that out. And then I'm just trying to say, here's a model where you can do what Bogle taught us to do without the crazy passive part. And that's all I'm doing. So I'm not telling you anything about gold. I'm not telling you anything about Japan. I'm not telling you anything about international markets. I'm not telling you, is the United States going to, you know, have a glory years in the future? Or are we going to, you know, is the economy going to go bankrupt? I don't know. What I tell you in the stock return predictor is what sort of returns we're going to get in the U.S. stock market if is the biggest word in the English language, if stocks return, stocks perform in the future as they always have in the past. That's all. The predictor can't be wrong because either it's going to work, that's possibility A, or returns are going to be different than what they've ever been in the past. That's possibility B. I've got a caveat that says if they're different than what they are in the past, the calculator won't work. So I don't have anything on the line. I mean, all I'm doing is reporting facts. I'm reporting data. I'm saying if the U.S. economy is as productive as it's always been, you know, for a long, long time, you will get returns within this range. And here are the probabilities of the various possibilities. That's all. Nothing more, nothing less. I think it's a very big deal because the vast majority of investors today are investing according to a theory of what will happen if stocks perform in the future as they always have in the past. That is totally wrong. You see, passive investing is based on data. The trouble is all the data that the passive investors use is wrong. The data is right, but their interpretations are all wrong because what they do is they exclude valuations. They report hundreds of things about investing, but they always exclude valuations because that's intrinsic to passive investing. That's what it's all about. Ignore valuations. So they always get the numbers wrong. So you've got competing calculators. You've got, you know, you could, I'm sure there are calculators out there that do what, you know, what Bogle says or what Taylor Larimore says. You know, they just tell you you're going to compound, you know, you don't know exactly what you're going to get each year, but overall, you know, this is where they came up with the 50% thing. They said, be prepared for a 50% loss. I think all they did was there have been three times when stocks went to insane levels. And as I say, the one that's comparable to the current situation, it was a 90% drop. They just chose, of those three, the average price drop was 68%. One was 90, one was 68, and one was somewhere around 50. They chose the 50. They said, let's choose the best of all scenarios and tell people it's the worst of all scenarios. And that's what they did. And that's why Taylor Larimore's freaking out today, because the best of all scenarios turned out We haven't had a big stock crash given the valuation level that applied. We've had a very modest stock crash. I hope we're not going to see more, but you certainly ought to be prepared for at least another 50% drop if you know stock market history. But Taylor's freaked out because Taylor believed them when they said this is the worst case. He thought that was, it was really the best case. And he thought they were telling the realities. And they were, I don't think they were doing it intentionally. I think they were freaked out themselves, They think passive investing works because it has this emotional appeal. Anyway, I want to wrap it up. But the point here is, all I talk about is valuations. I think that's a big deal. That changes the model. It changes everything. But it doesn't answer every question. And a good follow-up podcast to listen to is, there's one I did pretty early on, the first 10 or 20, where I called it something like the case against valuation-informed index, and I gave 10 arguments for why valuation-informed indexing may not work. Listen to that, and you'll be aware of the weak parts of this, because there is no strategy that is all strong points. Every strategy has weak points. But, and if you're a rational investor, you want to know the weak points. That's part of what it means to be a rational investor, that you don't. The passive investor puts his head in the sand. He says, if I don't hear about valuations, they don't exist. They go away. And the rational investor says, no. I've got my retirement money on the line. I want to know. I want to know the realities so that I don't freak out. I don't want to panic. I want to know in advance what's coming. The rational investors are not panicking today. The rational investors are saying, hey, this is what we knew was going to happen. No surprise. Tomorrow will be another day. Now stocks offer a better long-term value proposition. Good. Good for us. Good for everybody. See, if you take the panic out of it, this price drop isn't a bad thing. You have to take two things out, the panic, and you have to take out the high stock allocation. Because if you had high stock allocation, you've suffered a wipeout, a massive wipeout of wealth. But if you were looking at the historical data when you were setting your stock allocation, you would have probably been going with something like a 20% stock allocation. So you wouldn't have suffered a wipeout. Anyway, the point here is, we have not answered all the questions at PassionSaving.com. I have no intent of answering all the questions. I encourage other community members to take up these questions because they're interesting and we need work on them. But I don't believe we'll ever be able to discuss them in a civil and reasonable way until we deal with the core question, which is this question of, do valuations affect long-term returns? And on that one, I think it's fair to say there's universal agreement that they do, but there is a group of passive investing dogmatists that is emotionally very unable to handle hearing about that reality, what it means, the implications of that reality. So my job is to overcome that obstacle, to get to a point where the boards open up again to honest posting. I don't mean only passive investors should be able to post honestly. Passive investors have always been able to post honestly. I'm talking about rational investors should also be able to post their honest, sincere views. They shouldn't have to change their views in order to win the favor of these goon posters. If we get to that point, then we've got something very special. And we can learn all sorts of things. We can learn about valuations, of course, which is important, but we can go way beyond valuations. It's not just valuations that we'll be talking about down the road. The whole thing flips. All questions become subject to discussion. In this new era, at the end of the passive investing era begins the rational investing era, and the one is as different from the other as day is from night. It's a total change. It's a change where we invite questioning, we invite learning, we invite civil, reasonable, friendly discussion. So that's my aim. Please don't think that I'm trying to answer every question, because I'm not. Please don't think I've ever tried to do that, or that I ever will try to do it. Many of these questions are simply beyond my abilities as a humble hobbit, a humble reporter. I don't know the answers to these questions. But there are smart people in our community that can give you some good ideas, and I'd like to see those people, They already do this, but I hope that they'll all continue. And as we open up the boards to a greater number of perspectives, I think the answers you'll be getting from these people will be sharper and better and more enriching. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.